We begin this hour with the sounds of heavy construction and the optimistic voices of building for an American tomorrow. The 20th century story of America's cities was build, build, build. In this century, though, the narrative has become repurpose, retrofit, demolish, revitalize. What does all that mean in communities around the nation? Do we sacrifice what makes each place in this country special by fueling prosperity at all costs? Well, what makes your town a one-of-a-kind in the USA?
My name is Michael. I'm calling from Spruce Creek Fly-In, just south of Daytona, Florida. And it's a great flying community where you can watch somebody take out their P-51 Mustang right out of their home, go to the runway, take off, come on back. Amazing place, millions of different aircraft for the whole community to look at, and great place to live.
Thanks, Michael. Listener Keith Blake of Nebraska says his part of the world is amazing, except for the weather. The cost of living is cheap, he writes, and the wildlife is incomparable.
In our United States, about half of the people live in cities and their suburbs.
But what made most of the towns and cities in America unique was built or started, crafted, or commemorated in the last century. Perhaps the last century filled with what we have called progress through most of our history.
After the blast, these acrobatic workmen, known in construction camp parlance as high scalers, swarmed over the face of the cliff to remove the fragments of rock shattered and loosened by the upheaval of the explosion.
The great cities of the USA were carved out of stone, erected on miraculous ladders of steel, and bejeweled with lights. That's what we're told. And in some cities, the building continues. Seattle went through an extraordinary tech boom transformation in the 1990s. So did Portland and Phoenix and Las Vegas. A lot of the buildings stalled out after the financial crisis in 2009, especially in Miami, where the cranes stopped. But they've resumed today. In all of these cases, the new booms and building strategies in American cities, though, can't escape the realities of 2013. The declining fiscal resources, flat population, crumbling infrastructure. Detroit, deep in debt with a local government stymied and dysfunctional. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder declared a financial emergency in the city on Friday and announced that an emergency manager will be appointed to run things. The road back is difficult for any city, and some in America know the tough path forward.
Steel, the bone and sinew of our industrial world. Steel, the tool and chief material out of which emerges an endless variety of products essential to modern life and progress.
Pittsburgh, PA was a steel boom town that went bust and now is a vital, clean city surrounded by rivers in beautiful western Pennsylvania. Don Carter is director of urban design and regional engagement at the Remaking Cities Initiative at Carnegie Mellon University. Don, welcome.
Hello, John. I'm glad to be on Takeaway.
Great. Also with us is Nick Spitzer, who's from New Orleans, a city that was struggling even before Katrina. He, of course, is the host of the public radio show American Roots and is a professor of anthropology at Tulane University. Nick, welcome to the show.
Good morning, John.
All right. Nick, hold on there for a second. Don, the Pittsburgh story is particularly interesting because it contains a lot of the sort of visual, industrial, kind of gentrification themes, rebuilding, revitalizing, and tax and fiscal problem themes that embody so many of America's city's problems in 2013. What's the Pittsburgh story as you see it?
Well, it's a remarkable transformation since the mid-1980s when our industry collapsed. We lost probably 200,000 or 300,000 jobs in the space of 4 or 5 years. People were leaving town. There was great economic and psychological depression. And in 25 years since then, we've transformed the city to one of technology, education, medical, finance, and we've turned away from the heavy industry that was maybe 20 or 30% of our employment is now less than 10%. It's a very different place 25 years later.
Now, how much of that was government-directed, state-directed, federal-directed, and how much of that was either market-directed or a kind of community consensus to move to something fundamentally different?
John, it's the latter. It was community consensus in the mid-'80s. It was very clear that something had to be done, and there was a regional vision put together that said, let's build them what we have. We have these beautiful neighborhoods. We have a strong downtown, but we have an economy that's one industry economy. So the big thing was to diversify the economy, and that's when they attracted the National Computing Center here, the Software Engineering Institute, National Robotics Center, built a new international airport terminal, extended the subway system. There was a lot of investment in economic diversification and in quality of life, because Pittsburgh in 1985, ironically, was voted the most livable city in the United States.
Because so many of the factories had gone quiet and the sort of signs of industrial malaise were absent by the 80s, and you've just built on that.
Exactly.
Don Carter is Director of Urban Design and Regional Engagement at the Remaking Cities Institute at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. We're going to come back to him in a second and talk about what is unique about Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. New Orleans, though, Nick Spitzer never has to worry about losing its uniqueness. But in the midst of all that, there are huge challenges in New Orleans, both before and after Katrina.
Yes, I mean, it's a classic old southern city, but it's also kind of a Caribbean city, and the cultural continuities of the place are the great strength. And after the catastrophe, it was really the culture that helped bring people back and made people want to rebuild the place. So infrastructure has never been the specialty of New Orleans. So that doesn't mean we don't need infrastructure or deserve it as a human right, but the intangible culture of music and food and the ritual, festival, Mardi Gras, those are the things that have made New Orleans special for people that have stayed there and then come there.
You've referred to New Orleans as a Caribbean city in part. And of course, if you go back way back in the deep history of New Orleans, that has definitely been the case even before the American Revolution. But contrast what New Orleans has done with that legacy with, say, what Miami has done with that legacy, where you have the South Beach kind of, you know, almost Aruba sort of gleam, very Caribbean. They handle boom very differently in Miami than you do in New Orleans.
Well, in some ways, I think Miami has taken over the mantle of being the gateway to South America as a major airport transfer point. New Orleans is sort of in the old school days of United Fruit and that sort of thing. Remember, we always say around here, water, water all around, but not a drop to swim in. It's not like we're sitting on glistening beaches here. But we do have that huge depth of cultural history down near the mouth of the Mississippi. And, you know, the French, the African, all the things that make New Orleans the kind of place where you can walk out the door and be in a jazz second line parade, all the things that people might pay so much money for in a New York or Chicago to go to a club and hear a jazz band, you hear it free in the street. And to some people, that quality of life has really generated a sense of wanting to be here and hope. And it's also got many people that have just stayed here. That's not a massive immigration in the 20th century into New Orleans. I mean, the immigration in New Orleans is 18th century and early 19th century. So it's a very different kind of history that is still present in how people live today and how they feel about the social order and economy.
All right, Nick, before we go, I'm going to plant a seed in your mind and then turn to Don Carter for a moment. I'd love you to tell the story of revitalization or the promise of revitalization in New Orleans through a single neighborhood from your experience. Think about that for just a moment. Nick Spitzer, of course, host of the public radio show American Roots. He's a professor of anthropology at Tulane University. And let me put that question to Don Carter at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. If I was to tell the story of Pittsburgh's transformation since the 80s through a single neighborhood or a single street corner, would you choose one? Is there something that comes to mind?
Well, almost any of the neighborhoods in Pittsburgh I could point to. One of the great strengths of these older cities in the United States, including your hometown of Grand Rapids, is the wonderful neighborhoods that there are. And that's what we start with. These are walkable neighborhoods. They have amenities. They're close to public transportation. There's many things going on well about it, and they're very authentic. That's what we build upon. So I said in one case we were diversifying the economy. On the other hand, we were investing in neighborhoods. Our downtown district is probably the strongest of any of these second-tier cities that you can think of. And you compare it to, say, Detroit, which, as you said in the opening to the show, is now a ward of the state of Michigan, as five other cities in Michigan. And Camden, New Jersey, is another example of a ward of the state of New Jersey. But those cities are wonderful cities. They're authentic. They have houses that could be repurposed. And that's what's happening in Pittsburgh, that there's a move back to the center city.
And that's what needs to happen in some of these other communities. Don, thanks so much. Don Carter is director of urban design and regional engagement at the Remaking Cities Institute at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Nick Spitzer, take us out with an image of New Orleans.
Well, it's not just one neighborhood. I think there are many neighborhoods that have come back, and people have wanted to be there. Also, we have this what we call the brain gain. I mean, my university has gotten close to 50,000 applicants for a 1,500-seat class. Kids want to come be part of a great urban recovery and help rebuild a great American city and learn the culture. And, you know, we have these people now that are the new migrants, the ones who bring in all kinds of special skills that have merged with the old folks. In the Bywater neighborhood, down below the venerable French Quarter, is probably the place people most see urban village life with a continuity of the old days, 19th century, but also all these new young hipsters. The guy that made Beasts of the Southern Wild is from New York and lives there, Ben Zahn. So we have a lot of Ben Zahns here these days, mingling with the old guard cats that like the jazz and all the food and carnival and all that. So I guess the way to leave you is to second line out with a little bit of a jazz parade and feel like we're all moving down the street together, enjoying ourselves and have a sense of purpose in being in New Orleans.
All right, with that image of a jazz parade, Nick Spitzer, professor of anthropology at Tulane University and host of the public radio show American Roots. Thanks so much, Nick.
Glad to be here. Thanks, John.
So get out a map and take a look at some of those places mentioned by our two guests. And also hold on to that map because you're sharing what's unique about the communities where you live. George Tucker on Facebook says FM radio was invented right here in Yonkers, New York. That's where he hails from. Amy Reinhart's in Quincy, Mass., which is on the cusp, she says, of undergoing a $1.6 billion renovation to the downtown area. Definitely taking a page from that Pittsburgh story. Don Satterfield writes from Las Vegas, where all the new people moving into my neighborhood are fabulous showgirls, strippers, and go-go girls. Houses are cheap right now, and life is good, says Don. Russ Davis, how you doing up there? I can see the planet Earth from my moon condo. Well, no, Russ, come on. Some of you see the clouds in your area having a silver lining.
Michael Yates, I'm calling from Seattle, Washington. What makes our region so unique is our rain. We hate how wet it is and how cold it is, but we love how green it is, and the rain does that. So thanks a lot.
It's what they say in Seattle. When the sun comes out, everybody smiles. Seattle, of course, has gone through an extraordinary transformation since the 80s as well. We have a lot of listeners out there. Some other communities?
Good morning. My name is Mike. I live in La Grande. We're a small university city in northeast Oregon. We have a high Forest Service concentration here, including an airport. They launch air tankers. I do believe with the Seacrest Station, if there are severe forest fires here and in the rest of the country, there's not going to be enough people, nor equipment, nor funding to fight them. And then the representatives of these areas, they're going to take the heat.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.